This is the second interview with Anita Castro. The interview was recorded in her home on January 16, 1976. When I arrived, it was obvious that she wasn't feeling too well and perhaps had even suffered some minor strokes since our last visit. She had been sick for approximately 1 week. We started the interview anyhow, as she was eager to proceed, and it was evident that she was having considerably more difficulty with memory than on the previous two occasions. Within the recounting of an event or story, she had relatively little difficulty. However, her chronology of events was very often confused. The interview covered the years from 1933, when she first started working in the shop and became involved in the union, until the late 30s, and focused on her job as an organizer. The incident of her fighting for equal pay as a business agent is recorded, though we did not record the events leading up to her becoming a business agent.
Started working in the garment industry.
Well, let's start with, you then came down to L.A. from Oxnard.
Yeah.
And went to work in a shop.
Yeah.
Right? Let's start with that. And what I'd like to do is focus...
Then I must have told you already, because I went to Montana first and came back. And then I got back together with my husband again. That was before he gave me that beating.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working in a factory because that's the only thing I knew, and I couldn't speak English.
What factory did you start in?
The name, I don't remember, but the employer's name, I remember both of them, but not the name of the factory.
What were their names?
Their name was one Mr. Schiff and the other Mr. Ashkenaz. And there was about 74 people working, and I was a finisher, sewing by hand. And after I told you when...
This was on dresses, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, were they cotton or silk?
No, they were silk. They were good dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in those days, a dress that was $10.75 wholesale was about a $40 dress. So that was a good line. And then when the girls were going to meetings all the time, and I asked them where they're going, and they say, oh, we're going to some religion. So I said, I thought you were Catholics. And they said, we are. So I said, what are you changing religions for? So they wouldn't tell me what it was. They were going to union meetings, but they were afraid because they thought I was too friendly with the poor lady and I might tell her.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I didn't know anything about it.
Have you ever heard about unions before?
Yes, I have. Well, see, they had already a strike in New York. And then, of course, my father... I told you he was an anarchist. Of course, I didn't know too much about it. He didn't talk too much about it in front of me, but I still knew that unions were good. And after the strike in New York, and I was talking to the girls in the shop one day, and I said, it's funny, I said, they have a union in New York, and I wish we had one in Los Angeles. So this girl said to me, well, what would you do if they had one? I said, boy, I said, they wouldn't even, my heels wouldn't touch the floor. I would go so fast to the union. So in the same afternoon, this one girl says to me, how would you like to go to a meeting with us? So I said, what kind of a meeting? I'm not a good Catholic, but I want to change your religion. So she said, oh, it's a union meeting, silly. And I said, all right, I'll go. So I went with them, and I spilled the beans, everything they were doing, how we do this work. And sometimes the tickets would get lost, and you make $4 or $5 a week, and you kill yourself.
Right. What you were finishing what?
This, making hems,
mm-hmm.
and putting some pads in here, and some fur pieces. I don't remember. We used to get 10 cents for a dress. And I turned out to be the fastest finisher in the place.
How many finishers were there?
Oh, I would say about 10 or 15. I don't remember. This pretty big shop was over 70 people. So anyway, we went to the meeting that night, and so I told them, how come you didn't tell me before? So they said, well, you're so friendly with the forelady, we thought you were going to tell her. So anyway, we went to the meeting, and And Mr. Scott was the organizer that talked to us. And he told us all the benefits we would get through the union. And the one thing that struck me that I guess got my attention, he says, you know, if you work in a union shop, you only work so many hours. You have plenty of time if you want to go to the library and read or whatever you want to do. And I used to read an awful lot in those days because I was trying to learn English. Mm-hmm. So that sounded very good to me, you know.
Was this meaning of just the women in your shop or some other shop?
No, it happened to be just for this shop. Mm-hmm. See, when we're organizing, we only call one shop at a time. The strike is not until later. So I told him the things they were doing to us and how we were treated, and we had to work Saturdays, and we didn't punch any clock. You know, we just keep on working. And so he said, well, that's against the law, and the NRA has the minimum wage. And in our shop, we knew there was an NRA because there was a picture of it behind the door. But that's all. So anyhow, we talked, and I talked more than anybody else. And believe it or not, there was a school pigeon among the group. Because when we came to work the next day, the boss knew everything that had happened.
Oh.
See, so of course I could have no idea what had happened. So the boss called me in and he told me, well, you owe me $10 and something for a dress. He says, I'll forget about it if you just drop that union that you want to meet him. And I guess I'm awful surprised, you know. So I said, no, sir. I said, you're not going to buy me with a dress. So I got highly insulted, you know. So anyway, I got fired.
Did the others get fired also?
No, just me. And so I went, I couldn't believe it. You know, they told me at the union, you cannot get fired once you join the union. And the seat was way over my head. I didn't understand everything.
Well, had this shop already signed
up?
No. The beginning
that was
the shop.
Beginning. So,
did he speak in Spanish to the
No, in English. Mm-hmm. I understood English. I couldn't speak very good. You know, my English was broken, but I understood everything. So anyway, I got fired. And I went to the union, I told Scott, I said, you know, I got fired. And he says, oh, you did? But he can't do that. So he gets the telephone and he calls and he talks to Mr. Ashtonas and he says, you fired one of the workers and it's against the law, you know, the law permits them to organize if they want to, nobody can stop it. So I guess he got scared. And he said, well, send her back. So I went back and all I went in like a frog and all so wide and I said, see, girl, they sent me back from the union. So I sit there, I said, all day long, and they gave me one dress to finish, which was 10 cents. That's how much I made that day, but I refused to leave. As long as I didn't get fired, I just stayed there. And when he saw that I wasn't going to quit, so I got fired again. Well, when I got fired the second time, well, we were told if we get fired, what to do. So I went to the one woman, her name was Sally. She was in charge of the shop from the union. I said, Sally, I got fired. So she just took off her apron and shook it. And she said, let's go, sisters. And all the sisters got up and we walked to the union, except two. And both of them had heart trouble and they were very close friends of the poor lady and they wouldn't leave, whether it was from fright or I don't know, but mm-hmm. we never did get them to go to the union.
So all 70
went,
except the two?
They went on strike.
And had they been going before the two meetings?
Yeah, they had. Uh-huh.
The whole shop
except me. I didn't know. See, I only had been to one meeting. And right after that, I got fired, see? And of course, I did know that the union was getting ready for a general strike. So when we went on strike, I was...
let's go back to when you all walked out.
We all went to the union, we had a meeting, and they told us, well, now we're going to stay on strike, and we don't go back to the shop. So we started picketing. That was my first experience, and we picketed all day. Well, we take turns because mm-hmm. it's awful tiresome, you have no idea. And I was young, and, you know, so we didn't let the steps go in, you know, and by force. And I used to stand in front of the door, and I just wouldn't let them go through. They push me, and I push back, and... So, not only...
Did you have any trouble with the police?
Oh, yeah.
When you were picking the
police? Right away we started having... 2 days later, a general strike was called from all the shops.
Now, there was a big meeting where the general strike was decided on. Were you at that big meeting at some auditorium?
No, I wasn't. because that must have been before.
Oh, before you got married.
Yeah, been 4 months, but I didn't know anything about it. They had a big, I think they called it the Embassy Auditorium. I don't remember too well.
Something Orange Grove Auditorium.
No, then I didn't go to that. Huh. So I don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, 2 days later, the general strike was declared that before we had this Bill Busey talking to us, and he said he got a few girls, I guess the most active. He wants to talk the most, I imagine. So anyway, I was one of the bunch. And he says, well, you might get a telegram anytime we have a general strike.
Oh, so the actual date was being kept secret. You knew it was going
to
happen.
Yeah, but I didn't know the date. So anyway, I got the telegram to be there at 5 o'clock in the morning. And the night before, I wrote a letter to my mother. I think I told you about it. And anyway, so I don't have to repeat that. So we got on strike. And
To your side, you went where again?
To the union office. It was a small hall. It wasn't a big hall like we got later.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we have some work for you. I thought I had to go to bombs, but instead they gave me a bunch of leaflets. And he said to me, you take this to the street and give it to the people as they go by. And I said to him, is that all I have to do? And he said, yeah, we just stepped. And I said, well, I thought I had to throw bombs. And he almost fell from the street. He laughed, but he got a real loud laugh. Well, anyway, I went with the leaflets and gave them out. And
what kind of reactions did you get from people when you...
Well, they just took the leaflets. They didn't say very much. And I was a greenhorn. I didn't even know what the heck I was giving. I knew there was something about the union. So then, of course, they arranged the groups, and we all picketed in front of our shops.
You each picketed in front of your own shop?
Yeah.
And have you been picketing continuously since your shop walked out?
Oh, I was on strike for 5 months and I never missed a day.
So when your shop walked out, it was 2 days before the
Because the other shops signed up,
mm-hmm.
but mine didn't. And they didn't get a union shop at the first time. They got a preferential shop, which means some people in the union, some were not. But they signed the agreement for 1 year only.
Mm-hmm.
And after 1 year, of course, we were supposed to improve the conditions, and it happened after 1 year, the shop signed up the union because the conditions did improve a lot.
Well, how many of you would pick it at a time?
Well, we just took turns. In the morning, we all come together, and sometimes even get more people from other shops to make a line that's big. Sometimes we have 200-300 people in there, and we just go around and talk to the people and tell them not to go to work. And the only thing I know is not to let them go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one day I was on the picket line, and a woman came in, and she was a new one, because that's how we get most of them, the strike breakers. And her son used to bring the store. I wouldn't let her go in, so I pushed her, because she wouldn't. She pushed me, and I pushed her. I don't remember which one did it first. It must have been me, but... The first one came and he said, well, are you ready? I never been told this before, and that's why it sticks in my memory. And the boy came and pushes me. He says, you red-headed bitch. And I called him, don't you call me a bitch. You know, and I started with that. Well, then, I don't know, you heard of C.D. Arrowitz, haven't you? Well, C.D. Arrowitz was on the picket line, too. He wasn't a big shot at that time, like later on. Mm-hmm. He was one of... Ross, you know, in the picket.
Was he from your shop?
No, he was not. But he was from the union, and he wasn't even a member of the union yet. Because to work for the union, you have to work in a union shop first. Then you got the union card, and then you got the job. And I imagine that's what they're doing with him. Actually. So anyway, no, they're not finished at least the shop. So the city was big and heavy, you know, and he came and he didn't touch this young boy that pushed me, that called me redhead bitch. But he went to his stomach and he just went like this, and he didn't, you know, I guess he was so strong, the kid, he must have been my 20-year-old kid, he flew across the street in the middle of Broadway. And then, of course...
Were the police around?
No, they would come by. Then later they would call them, you know, they would come in the cars. So they and if we saw anything out of the ordinary, then they'll come out with their clubs and start beating up people. And lots of times people got their heads broken when they didn't do anything.
Mm.
It was an awful fight because they had to throw stink bombs or, just like make you cry.
Oh, the tear gas? Tear
gas. And of course, you can take that very long. So when
do you recall when you were picketing out in front of your shop, they threw tear gas?
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't only my shop on strike by this time, you know, I was at 8:28 South Broadway. And there were shops at 8:18 South Broadway, there were shops at 8:20 South Broadway, there was a shop at 8:50, quite a few shops at 8:50 South Broadway, and 8:42 or 8:48, I forget also. So the whole street was full of people. So the police would come with clubs, and when we had too many tickets, for instance, in one line, then we'd divide them and send them somewhere else. So we always had a big bunch of people, mm-hmm. and we'd take turns because it's impossible to pick it all day. It's very, very, very tiresome. So we'd go to the union, sit down and rest while another group would come
How
in.
How long would you pick it?
Well, at the beginning, we used to pick it almost all day, but later on it was for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And take turns 2 hours and then go to the union. We have on a blackboard, you know, the names of the people or the one in charge and get the committee to go pick it so we don't get so tired.
Now, Anita, were there, in your shop, were there also men who were the cutters or was the whole shop women?
No, there was cutters. Everybody was on strike, women and men.
How many men were in the shop?
I can't remember very well, but I would say maybe 3 or 4.
Oh, and all the rest were women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they have maybe a couple of presses that were men. And maybe the shipping clerk or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see.
Now, so you would pick it about 2 hours a day? And then
not 2 hours a day. 2 hours at a time.
Oh, so you just take a little break and then go back.
Yeah. And we sat at the union the rest of the day. We danced, we sang, we played cards. Some of them just told jokes and spend the day.
Mm-hmm.
But I got very active from the very beginning. And of course, they kind of watch out for people like that. And so I was busy all the time. I never had...
Doing what kind of thing?
Well, like, for instance, in some cases, they used to send me on Main Street with a letter asking for food. And then the stores would say, we'll give you potatoes or rice or whatever. Then we send the truck and pick it up because we had a kitchen too.
Mm-hmm.
And we ate there.
What other kind of things? So you would go around soliciting food to the merchants?
Yeah. And then I would go at night visiting people at their homes, those that didn't want to come to the picket line. And finally, all the shops started signing up. But
this was about when? After about a month or so?
I don't remember very well. It wasn't very long, so maybe a month or two. I don't remember. I know my shop was on strike for 6 months.
Mm. Oh, let me ask you. I understand the way it was. Is it at the strike headquarters? There was a committee for each shop.
Yes.
Now, were you involved in your shop committee then?
Yes.
Were you the chair lady?
No, I wasn't. I didn't have enough experience yet. I was just one of the green horns that I was willing to.
Well, how did that work then? Each shop, the women from each shop would have a meeting every day?
Yeah, with somebody from the union.
I see.
And they would have a general meeting for everybody, you know, and they'd tell us, well, are you shop, we're going to do this tomorrow. Now, for instance, if the shop had too many strike breakers, then they would send a committee to talk to them on the streetcars far away from the shop. And there was quite a bit of violence, and the police used to come around and get those clubs, and they start hitting people sometimes with no reason at all. They were pretty rough too, but believe me, they were terrible, the strike breakers. And of course the bosses would tell them that they are lies, that we're not going to get anything, and nobody can force them to pay more and all that business. But they did finally. And they did get an increase.
But during this period of the general strike, were you arrested at all during that time?
I started getting arrested right away. I was arrested altogether. Of course, not that strike only, because there was other strikes years later. But altogether, I was in jail 37 times.
And were you arrested during the general strike?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you recall your first arrest?
The first arrest, it was funny. I didn't do anything. I was giving out leaflets. And, of course, I wasn't a citizen. So, and of course, that's the most important thing. When you come to this country, you want to be good so you can become a citizen. And they gave me a bunch of leaflets, and I gave out as many as I could, and somebody called the police, and they arrested me, and let's see, there was quite a few of us arrested, about six, I think. And I was new yet, so if I only could swallow those leaflets, I would have swallowed them, because I figured if they had no proof, they can't do anything to me. And I didn't know what they were going to do or what I had done. Because the only thing, I hadn't been fighting at all at this time, because I didn't know anything about it yet. But
What happened when they came up?
They arrested me, and they arrested the few others, and they take us to jail. And they had told us at the union, if you get arrested, they let you make one telephone call, so be sure to call the union. So we were arrested, and the first thing, they took all those clothes, and they gave us a bag, and gave us one of those jail dresses, you know, long down to here. So I tied the belt like this, and then I pulled the dress up. And we were, a bunch of us in the same room. There was all kinds of women. I think there was about four from the union. And there was all kinds. There was prostitutes, and there was, thieves or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I was sitting in there, and I was kind of worried, but not because I was in jail. I was afraid my first need, because I want to be a citizen, and I couldn't get rid of the leaflets. And the leaflets only said join the union or come to a meeting. I don't know what it said. So I stayed all day in jail. One woman is sitting, a young woman, and she's crying. And I said, why are you crying? But why are you in jail? And she said, because I was soliciting. But I didn't know what soliciting meant. So, and what were you doing? And I said, well, I was distributing. I thought, you know, I see the soliciting, I'm distributing. So, I asked her what she was soliciting. So she told me. So I said, oh gosh, I said, why do you have to do that for? I said, you shouldn't do that. I said, I'll tell you what. I said, I belong to the union. I said, we're garment workers. And we have a strike, but when the strike is over, then there will be plenty of jobs. I said, you come over and see us at the union, and you can get a job so, and you don't have to go looking for men. And the reason she was crying is because she was married, and her husband was coming home, and he was going to find her in jail. So I guess she was cheating. So anyway, they all laughed at the union when I told them, because to me it was so funny, you know. And then there was another woman, old Negro woman. That was another experience. And she was old, skinny. And once upon a time, she must have had a big bust, you know. So she had blue bags hanging, you know, like little dried up bags. And she had the dirtiest brassiere you ever saw in your life. Because we have to take the shower in there. And so she'd make her kids go like this. And then she put them under the brassiere. And I looked and I said to this one woman, I said, look what... look what she has. Well, anyway, she didn't care. About sometimes in the evening, they came after us from the union. Not
you were there all day?
All day.
During the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So about 4:30 or so, they took us out.
Do you remember what you were charged with?
Just distributing the leaflets, I guess, obstructing traffic or something. I don't know. Anyway, they let me go, but they came after me from the union. So I swore to myself, I didn't say anything to them, but I said, no more, I'm not going to go to the union, because they're going to put me in jail and I won't be able to become a citizen. But they took us to the union, and they put me on the stage. Gosh, the mailman. So they put me on the stage, and all of us, you know, and all how we behave so good, and we are the heroes and all that stuff, you know. And nothing, I guess, would dismiss the case, you know. Because the next morning I was out to go with leaflets and I got arrested again.
The next morning?
Yeah. But I didn't care because I knew that I'd make a telephone call and they'll come after me. Was it the first?
At that time, were you still with your husband or had you left
him? No, he was out. He was in Mexico. And I had no intention to go back to him, but at the time I wasn't worried because he wasn't here. So
you were arrested again the next morning.
And the same thing, I called the union. They came, they didn't keep me so long. Oh, and the food, they gave you something awful. But I was heavy eater and I was hungry and it was all bread and some kind of stew, nothing but fat. And so you just soaked the bread in that stew and that's all. And the coffee was like washed, maybe used up 10 times without sugar. Anyway, I never spent the night in jail.
Now, each time you were in one cell with a lot of other women?
Yeah.
The second time when you were arrested, were the other women arrested with you?
The second time, I think there was quite a few of the union too, but I wasn't scared anymore because I knew it was only leaflets and I hadn't done anything. And they let us go. So after that, almost every day.
You were arrested?
Yeah. Either because they find me talking to people or somebody say I pushed them. Even I, at that time, I hadn't done any pushing or anything because I was a lady, you know. I became a striker later on. Anyway, we kept on ticketing and they take us on that little Black Mariah, they call it. And so I say goodbye to everybody and laugh. And in the afternoon I come back and say, see, I'm here, nothing happened.
Well, how would they do it? Would they take a bunch of you and then they let you out and go arrest another
bunch? No. If we did something, either they thought we were pushing or we were insistent and not letting somebody in and somebody point at us. No, they didn't arrest everybody.
Ah.
They just arrested the leaders.
And then were the police just always present then? In the
most of the time. And if any, you know, when there's lots of people, you never know if somebody starts pushing or they start fighting and before you know it, there's a police car and that one and that one and they start saying and then they take them to jail.
And most of it was in calling people scabs and in leaving them when they were going in.
Or trying to talk to them, you know, and then they say that we're obstructing traffic. So this went on for months. In the meantime, the forelady of the shop got a terrific beating. And they blamed me on it. And I hadn't even seen her. And it was in the ladies' room. But see, all my life I had heavy legs, you know. And I was slender. I was more slender than I am now, but my legs were kind of heavy all the time. I'd never had three legs. So she could see the woman's face that beat her up, but she saw her legs. And if it hadn't been for her legs, I was the one that was accused. But when she said, no, it wasn't her because her legs are not like that. And it was funny. So anyway,
were you arrested and charged with beating her up?
No. No, but they were going to. But then when she looked at my feet, she said, no, it wasn't me.
So the whole time that you were picketing and on strike, the forelady plus the other two women who didn't walk out, plus the scabs, kept the shop going, in other words.
But after 5 months of negotiating, the employer finally decided to sign up with one condition, that I don't come back to the shop.
And you were really viewed as an instigator.
Yeah. So it was funny. I turned out to be the instigator, but the thing had started long before me. Only I was the one that talked the most, and I talked Spanish, and I was very bubbly, you know. I talked like even through my elbows.
So after the general strike was settled, though, your shop, plus some others, I guess, didn't settle.
Well, yeah, a few shops been signed, but my shop signed 5 months later because I went, you know, big-hearted and I told them, no, go ahead and sign. I don't care if I don't go back. I'll go and work somewhere else. So I went somewhere else. But
and what did your employer sign for? That was for preferential shop?
For everybody signed the same for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And after 1 year, of course, then they all became all union. But I never went to work there. But I did go there as a business agent years later.
Oh.
So So anyway, I went to work somewhere else. I figured it's easy, you know, I'll just go and work somewhere else. But I didn't know I was blacklisted. So wherever I went to work in a shop, I worked a day at the most, and by the end of the day, I would be sent out.
Oh, they would call up and find out?
Yeah, and they didn't tell me the reason.
Did you understand what was happening?
Yeah, I'm sure I did, but there's nothing I could do. And we could prove it that I was blacklisted. Because if they had been able to prove it, I guess they would have gone to the labor board and all that. So.
Well, was this second place that you went to a union shop?
No. Yes, they were union.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't like me anyway because they figured I was too much of a troublemaker. And I was sent to another shop. I forgot the name. It was a real good union shop. And it wasn't union yet that when I got there. So they put me in as a finisher.
And that was still piece work?
It was piece work. And I got the whole shop into the union the same day. The whole finishing department.
How big a shop was that?
Also about 50 or 60 people.
Mm-hmm.
Murray Goldstein was the name of the shop. So anyway...
And you just signed
up, took the girls to the union, and they all signed up with the union. So the boss figured I was in the finishing department, so he put me in as an operator. And I didn't know very much about being an operator. And do you know that I got the whole shop, the rest of the shop, in another 2 days? Of course, with help. I mean, others helped me, too.
How would you go about it, Anita?
Well, I would talk to the girls and say, look, that shop is already union, and they're paying them so much, and we only work so many hours, and we get... treated like human beings. They don't holler at us and look what happened in New York. And they already had a strike, you know, so they had. So it was kind of, for me, it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them were Spanish-speaking anyway. Among the operators, there was quite a few Jewish women. And the Jewish women were very much for the union. We had trouble with the Americans. Okay? I didn't have trouble with the Mexicans or South mm-hmm. Americans, whatever they were, because I talked to them in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that the trouble we have with the Spanish-speaking people is that they are very much home-bodied. You know, they go directly from the shop to home to cook. And so you have to talk to them at lunchtime or visit them at home. But they would sign up and join the union.
Well, would you usually do all this talking at lunchtime? Were you ever talk in the shop at all?
At lunchtime, we were told at the union not to talk. Well, of course, we whispered, but then we saw that the boss is not around, and I would talk. Otherwise, it would be just at lunchtime.
Did you have lunch in the shop?
In the shop, yeah.
How much time did you have for lunch?
Half an hour. Oh, and another thing, they told us we would have 1 hour for lunch when we had a union shop. So anyway, I organized the second shop in no time at all, and then I stayed there. They kept me, but the union wanted me because they figured I was good for an organizer, and I didn't even know it. So they...
Let me ask you, when you were organizing this shop, this you were doing on your own, or had you been talking to the union about doing this?
Well, I was trying to organize even the waitresses in the restaurants on my own. Because I figure everybody should belong to a union.
Have you learned more? What do you think? Where do you think your ideas came from?
Well, I was reading literature from the union and from my father. Like I told you before, I always said that the union is good. And then they told me at the union. They taught me at the union.
Mm-hmm.
This Scott was very good, and so was Bill Busick. And then of course Ross Pesota came later, and. I hear what they were saying, mm-hmm. and of course, it stuck in my mind. And
now, did you have, besides just having a strong sympathy for the union, did you have a broader political outlook about socialism, about capitalism,
anything
like that?
No.
It was just union.
That's all. And for many years, that's all I thought was union. And I, even to this day, I don't know too much about communism, except that I know it's no good because they suppress the people and it's. You can't do what you want. It's not a free country and all this. But in those days, I didn't
during
know.
During that strike and everything, wasn't there already a dual union that needed
trade? And we almost joined that one. Yeah, that was when the first...
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, see, we were all going to the union for general meeting. And Bill Busick was the general organizer. There was a woman, I don't remember her name, She was telling us, this way, girls, there was another union called the Needle Paper,
Industrial.
So, this is the way, so I'd say, no, Bill Busick says to go this way, so we follow Bill Busick. Instead, if I had followed her, I guess maybe I would have become a needle trade unionist, I don't know. But anyhow, we went with Bill Busick, and of course the other union couldn't do anything.
Because I understand from reading that there was a lot of that the needle trades union agitated a lot, that when that settlement was made, where most of the shops signed, they would kept trying to reach the workers, saying they shouldn't accept it.
Yeah, but see, at that time I still didn't know too much about those things. I was just a plain worker. It went over my head, so I didn't know too much about it. But I know that we had an awful lot of trouble, and there was one woman by the name of Virginia Flores that caused an awful trouble. And I never, because of that, until the day she died, I guess, I hated her, because she did finally joined our union. But she was, I think she was a communist, actually. But like I say, I didn't know too much about it. So it was plenty of trouble with them.
And in this, did most of the Mexican women respond to them?
No. I don't think it was half a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
See? And so anyway, we were on strike.
Oh, wait. Which strike was that?
The first one.
Yeah.
The first strike. And of course, after they signed, in the meantime, they, like I said, I organized a second shop. But
now, in the second shop, would you go to the homes at night also?
I didn't have to very much because it organized so fast. And you signed up right away. We didn't even have a strike.
Why do you think it's so hard usually to organize a shop. Why do you think they would?
Well, I'll tell you, because we had already a general strike. And because they knew that the conditions had changed, because conditions did change, you know, when the union came, improved quite a million times. So
this was just a few months after the general strike, in other words?
I don't think it was a few months.
Mm.
I don't think it was. Well, yeah, because I was on strike 5 months, and all that time the other shops were in the union. And then I started going to open shops to work, and I got, like I told you, blacklisted. And finally the union sent me, and then they told me wherever I could get a job, and if it wasn't union, together. They didn't say that, but they liked it because they knew I was going to bring people to the union.
Now, when you were on, let's backtrack to the general strike. First of all, when you were on strike, what kind of benefits were you
getting? We were getting $2 a week from the union.
Mm-hmm.
And a bag of groceries, and then we had lunch at the union. I ate salami until I couldn't stand it for years. Anyway, but I had a good time. Of course, I didn't have children to support or anything, but some of them I guess had a hard time. And those that have children, they got a little bit more.
I see. It was as a result of the general strike that the local was formed, wasn't it?
The local 96 was formed, because my name is the first one.
Right, and how did all that, how did you?
I don't know. Tell you the truth, they asked me if I wanted to be on the executive board. They nominated people, and I didn't even know what the executive board was, so I accepted. And then I couldn't get a job because during these 5 months that my shop was out, you know, and I couldn't get a job, and I was child broke. So I went to work at the place doing housework.
Oh, during these 5 months?
Yeah. And I went to, supposedly, to teach Spanish to children and take them to school, but I did everything except that.
You would work all day and then pick at the sign?
Well, sometimes. I didn't pick it very much later. The other shops had already signed. Then they called me to come to the union to the first meeting, and I didn't show up because I didn't know it was important. So when I came the following week or so, they said, why didn't you show up? We were taking pictures of the executive board and you weren't here. And I loved to have my picture taken, but I said, I didn't know, I'm sorry. So, then I started going into open shops to work, or union shops, whatever it was. I didn't left because they knew who I was and how far I would go.
But as a member of the executive board, do you recall being at the meeting where...
I used to go to meetings and I didn't know what they were talking about. because it was something new to me. You know, I would sit there maybe 2-3 months, I didn't know what it's all about. They needed for me to go someplace, who was willing to go, and I would raise my hand and I'd go. And I even went to Jewish meetings. Well, I didn't know what they were talking about. I said there had to be more than one person going. And I was always willing to go, so that I know that I went to some Jewish meetings and I just sat there. Then, of course, whoever went with me would tell me what it's all about. And
so you were right, really in on the formation of the local.
Yeah. And my name was Andrade then. So after, let's see what happened later.
So after you organized this, the second shop then, you worked there for a while?
Yeah, I stayed in the shop. Then they start sending me to different shops to organize. And I, whatever they paid, of course, by that time we're getting the minimum wage, which was the NRA, I think it's $13 or $14 a week, which compared to the $5 I was getting originally was big money.
And had your husband come back at this point?
I think so. And I stayed with him. And I got pretty active in the union, and I was working already in a union shop. And they asked me if I would speak over the radio in Spanish. So we had a Spanish station, and they would give me a speech, and I would read it over the radio in Spanish. And when I come home, my husband would accuse me of being out with other men. And I say, how could I be with another man when you're listening to the radio and you know that I was there? So one time, somebody invited me to go and meet a Hindu prince or something, and I didn't, you know, young and I green horn, so I figured that was all this. It was all this, like a fortune teller or something. And we went, a bunch of us, four women and one man. And my husband waited for me when I came home, and he happened to see that the man was the driver. And he didn't even get upstairs when he started beating me up. And I wanted to leave him, but I was scared to death of him. Well, anyway, we got very active in the union, and we were going to elect a queen, a Mexican queen, you know, for the fiesta. I don't know what month it was. And I made myself a beautiful dress and bought myself false eyelashes and all that. And we went to dance. And he took his niece and nephew to the dance, and he sat with me and he'd hold my hand like this. And anybody come and ask me to dance, he'd squeeze my hand and he says, go ahead and dance. So I said, no, I don't dance. So one time he went to the men's room and I decided, well, by golly, I'm going to dance now that he's not holding me.
This is a union affair?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when he came, he pulled me from whoever I was dancing with, and he says, we're going home right now. You're not going to go around dancing. And I had talked to his niece, and we were going to Las Palmeras. That was the name of a nightclub. I had never been to a nightclub before. And I had $2. So I gave the niece the $2, and I said, you tell him that you're going to pay, because I didn't want him to know I had $2. And I want to go to Las Palmeras. I figured God knows what a nightclub is. And when we came out of the dance, he said, no, you're not going. And he started beating me up right in front of everybody. He tore my dress. I had some crystal beads, good ones. He tore that. He started pulling my eyelashes. I just thought I was killing him. Well, anyway, I had a black eye. His niece tried to defend me, and she got her nephew kicked by him. And then I got so scared and so mad. And I said, I never want to see you again. If you ever come near my house, I'm going to have you arrested. And I went with the niece, and we got some leeches in the drugstore and put the leech on top of my eye. And we went to the nightclub. We stayed up all night. From the nightclub, we went to radio station. I had never been to a radio station. And so this was at the beginning, later of this. And he didn't. No, I have been to a radio station. I have already spoken quite a few times in Spanish. And see, being that I'm Yugoslav, I would do some crazy things, like when I finish my speech in Spanish, I would say a few words in Yugoslav, because the Yugoslavs knew that I was talking, see? And I'd say, how are you, my compatriots, or whatever. org, hello Florida. And this Virginia Flores that didn't like me, she thought God knows what I'm saying, and she went and complained to the union that I was speaking another language. So they told me not to say.